You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
It's Monday, April 29th, and for all the furor over Gaza, there could still be another shoe to drop. We start here. Ahead of a potential raid on Rafah, Hamas puts out hostage videos.
There is a sense that time is running out for the hostages.
The U.S. is involved in ceasefire negotiations here, so what's actually on the table? Americans go there to relax, so why are so many ending up in jail?
Now they're cracking down on this and saying, look, we've got to keep our tourist destination, our island, safe.
A series of arrests is prompting concern from diplomats. And I like my candidates like I like my coffee, roasted.
My vice president actually endorses me.
But what can the White House Correspondents' Dinner tell us about the state of the presidential race? From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. It started with an encampment on the campus of Columbia University, but these scenes are now dominating colleges nationwide.
It doesn't feel as if the university is supporting its students, its freedom of speech.
This is not about us. This is about the genocide.
This weekend alone, hundreds of arrests were reported as police broke up pro-Palestinian protests. This included Northeastern University in Boston, Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri, as well as Arizona State University.
One of the most tangible actions we can take is to demand disclosure of investments.
Most of these protests are calling on schools to divest from any business perceived to be enriching or enabling Israel. Some, especially those in which non-students have joined in, have resulted in Jewish students reporting threats and harassment.
I am furious that we now go to school in a police state.
There are also many instances of Jewish students who don't support Israel's actions joining in on the protests. And school administrators have been conflicted. After all, the moment you call in police, you are potentially inviting scenes like what we saw at Emory University in Atlanta last week, when police appeared to use a taser multiple times on one protester, even after he fell to the ground and in their eyes continued to resist arrest.
Can you call the philosophy department office and tell them I've been arrested?
Teachers are now starting to be arrested alongside their students, and arrests might not even be the most consequential disciplinary action these students could face. Some are being suspended from their studies, others are being photographed by angry onlookers and told their photos will be sent to prospective employers. But as schools creep up on commencement, many feel the need to take back their campuses, to lower the temperature in some way. The thing you could imagine upping all this tension even more is if Israel does in fact go into the southern Gaza city of Rafah. Israel sees Rafah as the final stronghold of Hamas, but with so many civilians bottled up in this tiny space, it's got the opportunity to become a catastrophe. Well, in recent days, perhaps in anticipation of this, Hamas has been putting out more videos of what appear to be hostages that they took back in October. Because remember, in addition to killing more than 1,000 civilians, Hamas also grabbed hundreds of people off the street, knowing they could be used as bargaining chips later. So now the question is this Hamas trying to cash in? Let's bring in ABC's Tom Sufi Burridge, who's in Tel Aviv, Israel right now. Tom, we've now seen a couple apparent hostage videos over just the last week. What do we know about them?
Yeah, in just a matter of days, we've seen two separate videos, including two American Israelis, a video of 23-year-old Hirsch Goldberg Polin.
Shalom. Kolim li Hirsch Goldberg Polin.
He lost his part of his left arm when he was taken by Hamas. Hamas terrorist threw grenades into a shelter where he was trying to evade capture. So we can see in the video, he looks, generally speaking, in broad terms, he looks okay.
We heard your voice today for the first time in 201 days.
After the Hamas video came out, Hirsch's mom, Rachel, had a really moving message for her son.
We are telling you, we love you, stay strong, survive.
And then we've had a video of 64-year-old Keith Siegel.
אני רוצה למסור למשפחה שלי.
His head is shaven like Hirsch's. He's addressing the camera. Both of these men are speaking under duress. They are saying a lot of things which appear to have been written by Hamas. But I think some of the content of the videos is also their own words. That's your impression. They both say how much they love their families. They both talk about Passover. They both suggest that the videos are recent because they talk about the number of days they've been in captivity, and that broadly fits with where we're at in the war. And clearly Hamas is putting these videos out here at this time. They're trying to make a point. They're trying to remind the world at this crucial point when we've got a renewed push for a negotiation, a potential deal over a ceasefire. Hamas is clearly making the point that they have these hostages and that they are ready to do a type of deal.
Yeah, and what has the response been from the families or just from the broader Israeli public upon seeing these?
There's been a lot of protests on the streets. We've been out in Jerusalem. The families and the broader movement supporting the hostages is calling on the Israeli government to do everything in its power.
Ein Ohels is my friend. What is that video saying? What is the message tonight?
We are not tolerate anymore for political maneuvers on the back of our friends and the kidnapped.
There's anger on the streets. They want the hostages out.
We have proof and solid evidence that Keith is alive.
The hostage families have tried to stay away from politics over the months. I think more recently we have seen some comments where their patience is running out.
Put the priority on Keith and the other hostages coming home. And in order for that to happen, there needs to be an agreement. There needs to be a deal.
I think there is a sense that time is running out for the hostages because the Israeli government and really Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu is now facing a decision. He needs to decide whether he's willing to make enough compromises to meet enough of Hamas's demands to get hostages out, or does he want to go into Rafah and does he want to go after what Israeli officials say is Hamas's last stronghold in that southern Gaza city and where Israel's biggest ally, the United States, is saying, don't do it.
And is that essentially where these hostage videos kind of fit into the picture, Tom? Is Hamas saying, don't forget, we've got perhaps your greatest currency, Israel, right here, and your people will hold you accountable for whatever you decide, Netanyahu? I mean, is that essentially the strategy being played out right now with these videos?
I think that's true. I mean, Hamas is putting these videos out there to up the pressure on Netanyahu's government to signal to the international community that there is a choice here, that Israel doesn't have to go into Rafah. I mean... We think, and Israeli officials have suggested this, they believe that the leadership of Hamas in Gaza, Yahya Sinwar, who they say was the architect of the October 7th terror attack, they believe he is probably in that area, in tunnels down there. And I think everyone believes, again, this is not confirmed, that there are hostages in that area as well. So, you know, if the Israeli military launches this ground operation, aid agencies are saying it would be absolutely catastrophic for the civilian population. But the reality is, if they launch that military operation, it would be incredibly risky for the lives of the remaining hostages. We don't know exactly how many hostages are left alive. According to Israeli officials, we think it's around about 100.
We cannot support a major military operation in Rafah. First, there are currently somewhere around 1.4 million people in Rafah, many of them displaced from other parts of Gaza.
What does the U.S. role in all this end up being? Because on one hand, they've been very clear they don't want to see people going into Rafah. On the other hand, like, they're clearly tied up in these negotiations and a potential deal, right?
Well, the diplomatic maneuvers have gone into overdrive just within the last 24 hours, 48 hours. We're seeing increasing signals that the coming week is potentially crucial. We know that a Hamas delegation is heading off to Cairo. We believe Israeli officials are also heading off to Cairo. We've got Secretary of State Blinken flying into Saudi Arabia and potentially a wider trip in the region. The Qataris are also upping the pressure, saying that Israel and Hamas need to do more. Remember, Hamas's leadership is in Qatar, so they have some leverage over that group. There is a deal, according to the White House, on the table.
We want it to last for about 6 weeks. It would allow for all those hostages to get out and, of course, to allow for easier aid access to places in Gaza, particularly up in the north.
So what's also playing into this is domestic Israeli politics. And Netanyahu's government is at risk of falling apart because he's got hardline far-right ministers in his government, the security minister, the finance minister. They are warning the prime minister to not do a deal that sells out, that basically gives Hamas too much and means that the Israeli military doesn't go into Rafah and potentially snuffs out the remaining Hamas battalions that are said to be there. On the other hand, you've got Benny Gantz, a member of the war cabinet, brought in after October the 7th, an ally, more allied to the Biden administration's position on pretty much everything. And he's warning that, again, the government wouldn't have support if it doesn't prioritize the hostages over a potential military operation into Rafah. So Netanyahu has this big decision. Of course, Hamas is also a massive factor in which way he goes. But he is literally now being pulled from both directions, domestically, internally, and also under this huge international pressure. Much of that pressure coming, of course, from Israel's key ally, the United States.
Yeah, like you said, a lot of pressure here. And of course, every move that is made, we'll see the ripple effects of that, not just in Israel and Gaza, but around the world. Tom Sufi Burridge, thank you so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, how do Americans fare when guns are banned? Not well, apparently. The harsh sentences being doled out abroad after the break. Hey, not sure if mom has reminded you, but Mother's Day is coming up. And here's an idea to spread a little extra joy on this Mother's Day. Give the gift of Aura frames to the moms in your life. Named the best digital picture frame by Wirecutter and The Strategist, Aura is nothing like the digital frames from a decade ago. Every Aura frame is thoughtfully designed to fit any decor style with a stunning HD display, unlimited cloud storage, and super easy setup. Simply connect the Aura frame to Wi-Fi, use the free Aura app to add endless pics and videos from anywhere. You can do this remotely. Invite friends and family on the app. You can have them comment, heart, and send new photos to your frame. It's like a real-life social network that brings you and your loved ones joy every single day. Aura frames are especially useful for the hard-to-shop-for mom in your life. Preload it with their favorite photos and even a personalized video message. No need to wrap because every box is ready for gifting. Right now, Aura's got a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's Aura, A-U-R-A, Frames.com. Use code STARTHERE at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
When you think about going on a tropical vacation, your brain goes straight to the beaches, the resorts, the swim-up bars. But in most cases, of course, you're going to a foreign country and you have to abide by their rules, their norms. Well, late last year, the U.S. State Department put out a warning to travelers saying the island territory of Turks and Caicos has a really strict ban on guns and ammunition. If you are not licensed by police there, you can't have it, so don't bring it. Well, this weekend, a man became the fourth American in a matter of weeks to be arrested and to potentially face significant jail time in this small enclave with fewer than 50,000 residents. ABC's Morgan Norwood has been covering this. Morgan, what happened here?
Well, Brad, when you say jail time, we're talking about the possibility of like 12 years in prison. So wow. Tyler Renwick is just the latest situation or incident that we know of within the past 4 months. He is behind bars in Turks and Caicos after authorities say that they found 2 9-millimeter rounds in his backpack as he was reboarding a cruise ship. We understand that he was there celebrating a friend's bachelor party. He is a father. He's a dad. He's a husband. And he's now charged with possession of ammunition. And now we also spoke with his wife.
For one mistake having that, and then that's 12 years of your life gone. I just, like, I understand that there's laws and regulations, but there should be fairness.
She wants mercy. She says that there was no intent for her husband to hurt anyone. This was just a simple oversight.
Wait, and so when we talk about, you know, a couple rounds of ammunition, it might not seem super threatening. And yet then you hear this is not the only case in recent months. What other cases are we talking about? Do most of the cases sound like this one?
Yeah, you know, they're actually pretty similar. So we're talking about four cases within the past 4 months or so. What's interesting about all of these is that these appear to be hunting bullets. So it seems like, you know, what we're understanding from the folks involved in this is that, you know, maybe they went on a hunting trip. They forgot the hunting bullets in their backpack. Well, they then repacked that backpack with everything they're going to take with them for Turks and Caicos, and they carried on the plane, and now they're facing all of this jail time potentially. So that's what we understand is what's happening here. So let's start with Tyler Renwick. He was, of course, the latest American arrested in Turks and Caicos within the past 4 months on similar charges. Back in December, though, 72-year-old Michael Lee Evans of Texas, he was detained for possession of 7 9mm rounds. Then in February, authorities charged Brian Hagridge. He's out of Pennsylvania after ammo was found in his check bag.
You know, this was a simple human mistake that unfortunately has me in the situation that I currently am.
And then also earlier this month, Ryan Watson of Oklahoma says he was taken into custody. He again is asking for mercy as well.
I've never intentionally broken a law. Not perfect, but I just hope that they know that at the end of the day, this was an accident.
Four rounds, again, of that hunting ammo uncovered in his duffel bag as well.
Wait, and so, Maury, I mean, I guess I'm wondering, is this the local government there being stricter all of a sudden, or is this Americans in this sort of gun culture we have unwilling or just unable to properly check their weapons before going to another country? What is happening here?
You know, if you ask TSA, the State Department, they'll tell you it's the latter. But then also Turks and Caicos, the government will tell you, look, we have strict gun laws. Guns are banned in this country, and especially by tourists. Back in 2022, the government amended its gun laws, not just to crack down on guns and ammunition, but also to crack down on the punishment as well, imposing that 12-year minimum prison sentence. It used to be, Brad, that you could just pay a fine and all of this would go away. Now they're cracking down on this and saying, look, we've got to keep our tourist destination, our island safe, and this is the way to do it. This is really a deterrent.
And you mentioned the TSA. That makes me wonder, why are these people just being caught in Turks and Caicos? Because I imagine a lot of them are flying out there. Where they go through American security? Are we letting people travel with ammunition on planes?
You know, Brad, I can't even carry, you know, a full-size bottle of hairspray without getting stopped.
Right.
So it does beg the question of how someone can get through with ammunition. Look, TSA actually admitting in the case of Ryan Watson, they didn't catch it. Their systems didn't detect the ammunition. And so therefore, he was allowed to board that plane, get over to Turks and Caicos. In that same statement, they also say it's up to the passengers. It's their responsibility to check their bags and make sure that they don't have ammunition or anything that's illegal going into other countries. Which also brings us to the State Department, who says, look, you know, they issued a travel warning, you know, basically reminding American tourists headed to Turks and Caicos to double check their luggage, make sure that they don't have any ammunition, because, you know, in this particular case, you do have to abide by their rules. And it's your responsibility to A, know those rules, and then also make sure that you're not violating them.
And what really sticks out to me here, Morgan, is just how at the end of the day, you've got two countries with two very different sets of, I don't know if you want to call them values or expectations about guns. But clearly, once this very small country, again, 50,000 people on these islands, decided we are not going to have any guns or ammunition on our streets, that proved such a high ask of so many Americans that now you've got like this almost funnel of arrests happening as people just try to get back to the States. Morgan Norwood reporting. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rob.
Okay, one more quick break. When we come back, he was comfortable enough to crack jokes, but how comfortable is he looking at the polls? One last thing is next.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to LibsynAds.com now. That's LibsynAds.com.
And one last thing. President's got jokes, just not all of them are good ones.
I'm campaigning all over the country. Pennsylvania, Georgia, North Carolina.
I've always done well in the original 13 colonies.
On Saturday, President Biden joined members of the Washington media for the annual White House Correspondents' Dinner, a night celebrating journalism, politics, and wonky humor.
Donald has had a few tough days lately. You might call it stormy weather.
These events always kind of have a predictable feel to them, but they're really interesting to watch during an election year.
Age is the only thing we have in common. My vice president actually endorses me.
One reason is you can see the angles the president is about to take in his messaging to the broader public. Like, at this rate, it does not appear this election will be about foreign policy or economics. Biden is putting the Trump trials front and center, and he's capitalizing on one thing Trump doesn't have: time to campaign. The other day, while Trump had to be seated at the defense table in front of a jury, Biden was appearing on Howard Stern's program for the first time, saying he'd be willing to debate Trump later this year.
Can I tell you a fantasy I had?
If sure.
I don't know if you're going to debate your opponent.
I am somewhere. I don't know when. Yeah. I'm happy to debate him.
Meanwhile, Trump, who's portrayed Biden as an ineffectual leader who's weak on key issues like immigration and terrorism, says he welcomes debates, the more the better. And if Biden thought he'd escape the night without a few jabs from the evening's host, Colin Jost from SNL, well, he was wrong.
My Weekend Update co-anchor Michael Che was going to join me here tonight, but in solidarity with President Biden, I decided to lose all my black support.
Jost not so subtly pointed out that some of Biden's own supporters have cooled on him since taking office and really seem to embody lots of Americans' confusion with the state of affairs.
The candidate, who is a famous New York City playboy, took abortion rights away, and the guy who's trying to give you your abortion rights back is an 80-year-old Catholic. How does that make sense?
And this is really where the race does stand right now. Americans seem most unified along the theme of the whole world seems upside down, which doesn't necessarily favor a current or a former president. National polling data show Biden and Trump neck and neck. So does just about every swing state poll we've seen recently. They're within the margin of error. Even the wild card in this race, RFK Jr., potential third party candidate who was once seen as a liability for Democrats, is now getting barbs from Trump, who thinks his supporters could be swayed over to RFK, which is why Jost seemed perhaps the most amused this year by the role of political journalism itself.
Like many of you here tonight, I pretend to do news on TV.
Because in a world where lots of people have predictions, the smartest people in the room have learned nothing is a sure thing. Like, the joke that really, I think, cut deep to journalists was when he said, "Journalists, you guys are doing the real work for democracy, which is feeding AI systems all the words they need to replace you someday." Too real, man. Too real. I'm Brad Milkey. I'll see you tomorrow.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.